I know who it is, so he's probably losing his focus on the puck, or something's happening where things are going on in his brain, and it's the brass monkey with the symbols, and he can't focus on the back door. Welcome back after a very long hiatus, 2 years, to the Bujan Roundtable. I'm Jamie Phillips, former professional goalie, current physical therapy student, and I'm joined with my co-hosts, Derek Bujan and Mike Albanese. And before we get going, Albo, you're the one that summoned us back into this. So tell us right off the bat, what's on your mind?
Yes, this started last Monday, I think. And the basic premise is we were doing a skating drill, and Derek came in, as he normally does, and just I see him looking at what I'm doing. And I said, okay, so I'm going to show Derek what we were doing, and then Derek's going to tell us all why this is wrong. So it was a backdoor play. And the goalie that we were working with, who for context is in his second year of junior C hockey, and not a great skater. And he was saying on backdoor plays, I'm coming across too flat. So I'm basically he's chasing the pass instead of trying to chase the middle of the net, right? So he's not coming back towards the net. So we were doing a skating drill that had him cutting back more where he's just above the post. And Derek's comment was that this is never going to help because his problem is not the ability to skate in that way. His problem is his inability to read the play. And that's kind of where it all started. So I don't know if Derek has wants to correct me at this point before we go any further.
Yeah, there's lots of things you've already screwed up. So, number one, the goalie in question is 6'4", and he's not a poor skater. But for a kid who's 6'4" and probably 205 pounds, he's got very light feet. He's got very good edge work. He's very good down skater. So he's not a bad skater. He struggles choosing whether he should T push or shuffle at certain times. That's where the struggle comes from. He comes in, he says, "I'm struggling making saves backdoor because I'm sliding flat." Albo says, "Okay, we're going to do 10 times in a row where you come out to the 45, you pivot, and you slide backdoor." That's helping nobody. That's helping nothing. That's developing nothing because it's a controlled play where your mother could do that, Albo. That's helping nothing, absolutely nothing. So to me, it's a complete waste of time. If you want to do a skating drill where you work on your cutting, then do a skating drill where you work on your cutting. But to simulate the backdoor play and say, "Okay, you're fixed," no, you're out of your mind. That doesn't help anything because the play or the read on the backdoor is to make the read. Did the guy shoot? Did the guy pass backdoor? Then you need to connect the dots. You need to process and connect the dots and then cut and slide backdoor. That has absolutely nothing to do with a controlled backdoor simulated skating drill.
Here's where I disagree with you. But in my mind, from what I have seen from him, he's not a great skater. I will disagree with you on that. You might want to spin it and it's a different thing, but I don't think he's a great skater.
What are you comparing him to? You're telling me,
Other goalies at that level.
tell me what other goalies at that junior C level that you've seen this year?
I've not many this year because I don't coach that league anymore, but
Play junior C?
what's that?
Did you play junior C?
I did, yeah.
He's a way better skater than you are. You are not a better skater than him.
Absolutely, I was.
Definitely not.
Are you out of your mind?
No, I'm 100%.
Also, skating back then was a different thing.
You are
We
not a
didn't
good
have we didn't
better.
really have down skating practice back then.
Okay, well, the drill that you simulated started on his feet, so it's not even a down skating drill.
The point of this is not to say that I'm a better skater than him because I don't care about that. That's not the point. But
Then you do.
what I'm saying is that if I thought that he could physically do that movement 10 times in a row perfectly, then I wouldn't be doing that. But I think he struggles to do that movement, so that's why we're trying to just, we'll call it a dry run without pucks, do that movement so he can build the capacity to do that. Because even when we brought pucks into the equation, his ability to do that movement was, if he had to do the movement 10 times, he might have done it right 40% of the time.
Yes, because now when we brought pucks in, it wasn't controlled. It was, he had to make the read. The shooter had the option. So where's the breakdown, Jamie? Please tell me.
First, because you're saying sliding too flat, like that comes from the read, because all it is, unless there's a massive breakdown somewhere in his technique, and essentially being like his chest is so incredibly late that his hips aren't turning and he's not getting even remotely squared on a proper angle, then it has to be a read, because other, like pushing backdoor, making a backdoor save is just a slide where you pivot or C cut or whatever a little bit more than if it's not backdoor. That's all it is.
Okay, let me ask you this question. You guys can answer this question. Puck is a foot above the goal line. Okay. Mm-hmm. Players at, so the read for the goalie is that he's in an RVH.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
Elbow.
Yep.
Okay. That pass now goes cross crease back door to a guy standing back door, and he puts it in. Goalie is still in an RVH. He comes in and says, I got beat back door in RVH. Albo starts working on his RVH. What was the problem? Was it the RVH, or was it his ability to make the read that guy passed and didn't shoot short side?
He didn't make the read. He couldn't get across.
Yeah. So working on a perfect short side RVH doesn't help make you make that save.
No. I agree, because then it's just a read, because a backdoor save is just a normal push. You're just turning a little bit more.
So is there a way to work on that in a skating way without pucks? Because it sounds like, based on what you're saying, the only way to address something like that is 100% puck related, where you're inducing a situation.
That's because it is 100%. You said in this situation, for me, it sounds like it's 100% a read. So you can do this without pucks. You can still pass and not have a shot, but you give that player, like, you basically, you're working on the goalie's patience and his ability to read the blade and whether that blade is passing or that blade has not opened up to pass. And so that goalie needs to work on his patience and then be able to adjust. And so chances are losing his focus on the puck, or something's happening where things are going on in his brain and it's the brass monkey with the cymbals and he can't focus on the back door. So you can still simulate that as a skating drill without a shot, but you should have a puck, like two shooters passing back and forth, and he has to make that adjustment.
I like where this went. Like, this is where I wanted this to go, because Alvo asked a good question. How do you work on that without just doing that situation? You can do skill development for that without making it situational. Like, you watch Jamie's edge work stuff on Instagram and YouTube. There's no net, there's no crease, right? So that completely takes out any idea that it's a situational drill and it's 100% skill development. You can work on that C cut. You can work on his ability to cut. You can work on his ability to leave the flare leg and a slide to make sure his head and his chest are going the same way. You can do all that in the skill development outside the net where there is no read. But for him to be able to connect the dots and bring those together, he has to be able to make the read. The head has to process, and then the skill will have to take over from there.
Being able to make that read comes from exposure. Seeing that same situation again and again and again, whether it's in like goalie skate situation or team practice or game situation, you don't learn to read the release until you've seen hundreds and thousands of that same situation or similar situations, and then your brain hopefully can process the difference. But again, like, there's a reason that some guys are better than others, because they can make that read and they've learned to make that read over time. So for him, he needs that emphasis should be on that, like, patience, those drills that Bouge used to, I don't know, you probably still do them, those, like, a lot of those, like, deception drills, and being able to, what is that player doing? What is that blade doing? Am I looking at the body? Am I looking at the puck? Am I looking at the stick? Just learning that patience and that read. Like Derek said, it's skill, like, the skill's there, the read isn't. So hidden putting the line, drawing the line between A and B isn't happening.
Right. I hear you, and I do agree. But let me ask you this. How do you explain how do you explain like this type of thing where I'm saying, okay, in this drill, you're going to start in the same place and you're going to end in the same place. Like I'm not changing anything. It's just you move from A to B to C, and then the D is the end spot. And between C and D, right? His positioning on D is changing where nothing else is changing. So for me, I'm like, I'm struggling to understand how that could be.
Can you give me an example of this drill that is in your brain? Because I can't figure it with picture with a bunch of letters.
So the drill is we'll start on the blocker post.
Yeah.
You come out to the top, to the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You take like two shuffles over to the blocker side. So you're going back to the side that you came from.
Yeah.
And then the puck is going back door. So you're sliding across the crease glove side to D, just above the post.
Yeah.
So where you're going from B to C doesn't change. Where I'm asking you to go from C to D doesn't change. But when you finish at D, you're ending at a different spot. So something mechanically he's doing different from time to time. He can't repeat the same movement over and over.
Well, I was in the room. I watched him do that drill. It slide without pucks. He did slide at the same spot every time without pucks. I think the bigger question is, okay, if you want to work on just that slide, right? So if your main focus was the cut in the backdoor slide, why did you have all the other gaga? Why did you have them come off the post and do the shuffles? Why didn't you just have them start on the 45 and slide backdoor?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because in my mind, when you're playing hockey, it's very rare that you're going to be from one position to another position. A lot of times when you're making a save, there's a lot of pre-movements to that, right?
Yeah.
Fair? Like you're going to have to do something. You're going to have to move somewhere before you have to make the ultimate movement that is the save. So I was just trying to mix in some of that.
The thing is if someone has a problem in their basic skill development, the last thing you want to do is add more elements to that skill. So if he for whatever reason cannot for the life of him cut himself on, put him on a decent angle and push just outside the post, then working on shuffling or sliding or any sort of element that's going to influence that and make it harder is the last thing you want to do. So when you're learning a skill, you want to break it down to its most simplest form. And once he's been able to master or got a grip of like progression number one, then you can move into something too. Okay, now we're going to add in one little shuffle and turn. Okay, now he's got that. And then you build up from there. So by making it more complicated, you're actually putting in kind of like, basically you're putting in bad habits, because one, he's probably overthinking. And if you establish that his problem is something so simple, overcomplicating it is just basically just throwing out the drill, because you'll never get that basic pattern down.
Right. Okay. And I appreciate the progression side of it. In my mind, those pre-movements weren't overcomplicating it, because those pre-movements are so basic and he can do those
but
fine.
I don't mean to like science up on you, but in terms of like skill development and the actual like motor development of the nervous system and how your brain and nerves and muscles process things, you need to focus on the most basic skill. And once that's down, then you can move up. So you don't want to overcomplicate.
I get that.
So like, right. even though in your mind, even though a shuffle is super simple, adding in a shuffle into something else is now adding another element that brain and has to process. And if that brain hasn't already processed the thing that you want it to process, it's not going to learn it.
Right.
So you have to so that's why with little kids, we don't do intense edge work skating drills. We just do, all right, keep your glove up and shuffle, because they don't know how to do that. And so you're not going to tell a kid, all right, we're going to T-push, backdoor slide, shuffle, shuffle. The whole time you have to keep your glove up. No, it's just like, let's just move. Let's learn what a T-push is, keep your glove up. And then when those kids, turn 12, 13, and they've got that because they've done it so many times. All right, now we can try something else. And so it's all of that, like, that progression of skill development. And so even though he's older, if you think that he can't slide, you just need to work on sliding. Like, doesn't matter which direction, just sliding. So I would say on that one, you kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater, essentially, and you overcomplicated it too much where his brain couldn't handle it.
Back to the overall argument of skill development or being able to read the play. How much should we do in terms of skill development and then situational drills? And when I say situational drills, I'm a huge believer that you can't have a controlled situational drill. It has to have options. You have to give the shooter options. You have to give the shooter pass options. You have to give them the option to move and change release. Otherwise, it's what we see in NHL pregame skates where the goalie coach is standing still in the slot shooting at their belly. And I don't think that's how we can develop goalies to high levels anymore. Because if you ask any player that's, say, in their 30s, so Jamie's age, how many skills coaches had growing up, the answer is going to be maybe one or two, right? Mm-hmm. One or two coaches. Just in our area now, in a 30-minute kind of radius, I can think of 25 different skills coaches. So players are getting better. Yeah. They're also how to score. So we no longer can set up a puck in a stationary spot and shoot pucks at their chest and shoot pucks at their pads. We have to get shooters, and we have to give shooters options, and we have to do situational drills with passing options. Otherwise, we are going to have kind of the same problem in the next 5 years where we don't have goalies that can read the play.
Yeah. Actually, that brings up like a really good conversation I've had with a few other people. So obviously I post all my drills on YouTube and stuff. And since I had two freshmen, a lot of the first 2 weeks I've just been like, hey, like basic foundational things that I like, basically whatever Bouge taught me, I'm going to try to replicate with these guys. But someone asked me, he's like, how come you don't tell them where you're shooting? And the thing is like, I'm fortunate where I get guys that are Division I level goalies. So they already have all those skills developed. So like a little kid, yeah, you can be like, hey, we're going to work on your glove. You can kind of give them a read. But once they get to the point where they have an understanding of how to move like a goalie and be like a goalie, you have to eliminate the black and white. Unless for some reason it's I'm shooting on the far side because I'm trying to lead you into another save somewhere else. And occasionally I will do that, but there's always a shot to score because these guys know how to make saves. What I need to do is I need to try to replicate like Bouchette options or game situations or things where they have to mentally process the play, because that's what's going to get them better. Me just shooting but like at their chest and doing butterflies and like stick saves and stuff doesn't do anything because they can do that. And I think that's like something that like I guess Derek's saying is that age of goaltending coaching is over. And the only reason you see that going on in the NHL is because being an NHL goalie coach is like the easiest job in the world. Not saying those guys aren't qualified, but you get the 1% of the 1% of goalies, and your job there is to make sure that they feel good. So by shooting the puck in their chest makes them feel big, makes them feel confident. You don't need to teach them how to make reads. They're the best goalies in the world. They can make reads. So that's why when people watch NHL goalie coaches and they're like, oh, well, all they're doing is T push out, shuffle, slide, gut save. Yeah. Because what are you teaching Andrei Vasilevskiy? Nothing. That's so good. You don't have to teach him anything. So what you have to do is make sure that he feels good after he gave up four goals the night before, and he's going to bounce back and play sick tonight. So you just boost his confidence, tell him how sick he is, hit him in the chest, be like, man, you look huge today. That's all it takes. Like, being an NHL goalie coach is more about being like a mental sports psych than it is a goalie coach. It's different than when you're working with junior kids or even American League guys and things like that, where you're actually trying to work on like getting them those skills to the next level. But that's something that people, I don't know if the people don't think about or people just don't want to talk about or whatever it is. But I mean, that's why you see North American goalies are not where they should be given the amount of resources available.
Okay. So what has to change for that to change?
See, like I go on Instagram and you see you see like a lot of nonsense. And I know like some people just post things to get views and likes, and that maybe doesn't represent the actual coaching. But I guess like the, what I want to say is you taught me how to be a smart goalie, and that it doesn't exist from what the goalie, even the young goalies that come through, I get at camps and things like that. They don't understand the game very well. And so I think that's a problem.
Huge. I don't know how many goalies. Okay, put it this way. Saturday night, from when you were 12 years old to 15 years old, if you weren't playing hockey, what were you doing?
Watching hockey.
Watch Hockey Night in Canada, right?
Yeah.
Don't know how much that's happening anymore. Like, I'll come in on like a Monday, I'll have my class come in, and I'll be like, hey, did you guys see that game on Saturday night? You watch the Leaf game? Or, and it's like, no, I didn't.
So I ask goalies all the time, who's your favorite goalie? They're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, so, you're like 11 years old. What do you, you don't have 20 favorite goalies right now? They're like, no, I don't know. I don't watch hockey.
But that's what I like about like the Scandinavian model, where it's that hierarchy. So you have your, like, let's just say Sweden, for example, you have your SHL club and you have your Allsvenskan, you have your levels, but each town. So like you say, at Frölunda has their top teams and then they have their junior teams, and it all builds upon each other. Resources are shared, but those young kids, those young goalies can look up to the goalie at the next level, the next level, the next level, and they watch them. They're exposed to them. They train together. Those goalie coaches all interact and they build their goalies together. And so when you're a 12-year-old kid, you're being exposed to the top guys. And so you watch them and you have access to see what they do. You have access to the same coaches. And you can learn, just like, you know, how we used to watch Hockey Night in Canada. We used to watch all these games and watch Carey Price and watch all these guys. That is available in person to those goalies. And it's just built in. Whether that is a part of the design plan, maybe, who knows, but it's readily available. And I think that, but it, that intelligence of being a goalie from what I see is lacking. Like I texted Bouge this summer and I said, I think kids are getting dumber, because even simple things didn't. And then I was coaching just at the tech hockey camp. Some of these kids are like AAA level. And like, I would say, like, why are you T-pushing in this situation? They didn't give me an answer. It's like, this is a backdoor one-timer. This doesn't make sense that you would T-push. There's nothing. And these are like 14, 15-year-old kids.
Let me ask you guys this, because Jamie, you bring up a great point with the hierarchy in European hockey, and the way that the pro game is like so much more attainable. It's almost like I'm wearing the same symbol, a different version of the jersey, but like, this guy's like in my system, kind of, right? You look at Victor Hedman, when he wrote an article in the Players Tribune, he said, I've only ever played for two teams in my life. I played for Frölunda Indians and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Like, that's it. Mm-hmm. So do you guys think that there's any impact on the, like, the head coach's ability to teach the game to the players and the goalies? Because I know that, like, the head coach's job is not to make, like, the goalie better, so to speak, but at the end of the day, his job is to teach them how to play hockey and the game and the systems. And from some of the minor hockey coaching that I've seen some of it is like quite good, and like the kids are learning skills and like there's actually a system. But then there's other coaches that I've seen where it's almost like the only thing that they're telling these kids is like, make sure, you know, we pass tape to tape. Like, there's no, they're not actually teaching them hockey at all. So I would have to think that that has some ability on the goalie's ability to develop and get better.
Yeah. But how many of those goalies, when they go to the whiteboard, are paying attention and trying to learn?
Well, that's on the individual,
I think. Well, that's 100%. But I was at a practice on Wednesday. I had one goalie I was talking to in the net after the drill, just kind of correcting a little bit of some depth and position issues. They're learning the next drill. As I'm coming up, they break off. So I asked the goalie that was in front of the board, hey, what are we doing? And the answer was, oh, I have no idea. I wasn't paying attention. Like, you just lost 3 minutes of teachable moments where your head coach is explaining a situation so you can visualize, see it, played in your head, and then it becomes familiar, right? The biggest reason I want guys watching games, and the gel game especially, is because in the NHL, it's very, very coached, right? Overcoached, some say, but it's very predictable. It becomes predictable and becomes very routine. A 3-on-2, they're going to attack the same way, right? And it happens over and over and over again. If you watch 3 or 4 3-on-2s in an NHL game, they're all going to look the same. Same with a 2-on-2, right? A 2-on-2, the players are going to do this almost the same thing every time. So when you now become it's coming at you, you can almost anticipate the play because you've seen it so many times. But that's only if the goalie is focused and paying attention and using those moments as teachable moments and trying to learn these things so that, like Jamie said, his biggest skill was he was able to read the play.
And but I think like ultimately, like I tell my goalies this because Boosh told this to me, is like I want to build smart goalies. Like you can get away with having not being the greatest tracker, not being the greatest skater, not being super tall if you're smart. And that's why, like, for me, like Blake Piatela is having so much success. He's not the greatest skater. He's good, but he's not the greatest. He's small, but he understands the game and he's able to make those reads. And he's really good at controlling his depth, and he's not super aggressive most of the time. And he's aggressive when he needs to be. And then he's been top 10 in the country for the last 2 years, not really because of anything I've done, but because I try to expose him to a lot of different situations. And I ask, and I do it what I find that like the way Boosh taught us was really good, where he would ask us what we did wrong. And so that ability to self-evaluate is such an important skill, because if I don't have to teach them anything, that's good, because that's how you learn. You learn by making those mistakes and self-correcting. If someone's constantly telling you, like the classic, oh, you keep your glove up, and when you get beat, glove side. So stupid. That's not why you're getting beat glove side. What's the problem? It's like, oh, well, I didn't, you know, my chest was late, or I didn't take a head check, so I didn't know where he was, or I squared up to his body and not the stick, or something like that.
Yeah.
Like that, that's why they get scored. That's not because their glove was down. That's the game again coming, because the difference between someone who's an instructor and someone who's a coach, someone who can see that and find ways to find the problem and explain it to the goalie in a way that they'll be able to actually learn from it, or just say things that they think they see, or just do drills with really no, like, oh, you got big glove side. Let's just shoot a lot of pucks at your glove. It's not, unless they're blind in one eye or something, like that's tracking isn't the issue.
Here's the scary thing about the goalie coaching world, I'll say. I remember near the end of my playing career, I started working with a goalie coach who is no longer coaching, but had played in the NHL, coached in the NHL, literally a couple years before I met him. And I started going to him because my old man was like, hey, this guy obviously knows goaltending. Let's go to him. And I would literally stand at the top of the crease. He would take slap shots at my shoulder and I would just shrug pucks away for 20 minutes. I literally taught myself not to look at the puck, because I can just look at the ice and shrug the puck away. I can feel where the puck's coming. And like, that was the goalie coaching that I had when I was playing junior hockey, from somebody who'd coached in the NHL and played in the NHL. So like, if you can't trust that guy, like, my God.
And I'm like, the thing is that there's so many problems. Like, there's a lot of problems with that just that statement from a thing about the onion. You're peeling out like this classic Shrek line. You're just going to peel away the onions. But one, you can't, that for that goalie coach to treat you like he would treat his NHL guys is a problem, because you weren't an NHL guy. And so treating everybody and coaching everybody the same is an issue. Number two is there's that mindset where just because someone played in the NHL doesn't qualify them to be very good, in the same way that someone might say, well, like Booge, you never played higher than junior B or junior A. You're therefore you can't be a good goalie coach. It's not how it works. Like, that's why I get upset. And like, I texted you when I changed my business name, because I really didn't want to rely on Jamie Phillips, former pro. He's a former pro. He knows what he's doing. I wanted to show I knew what I was doing in the strength training and the goalie coaching world based on the body of work and the evidence that I provide and the quality that I give my athletes. But there's that mindset where just because, you know, just if Carey Price opens up a goalie school tomorrow, people are going to go because he's Carey Price, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he's a good goalie coach. And so there's a lot of different like things, but there's no standardization across the board because you can get someone, you can just get someone who never played, who's really good and actually understands it, but they won't get the respect than someone who played in the NHL. Like most NHL guys don't know why they're good. They can't teach very well because they never had to think about why they were good. They were just always good.
Like the goalies themselves, you mean?
Goalies or players or whatever. Like there's a reason like right. Wayne Gretzky wasn't probably wasn't a great head coach because he was just the best player to ever live. He never had to think about things.
He just so that's did why, it, yeah.
But then when you get guys that are more cerebral, and the best combination is to get guys that played at a high level, but maybe weren't the best, but they, in order for them to get to that level, they had to think and break down their game and the game in ways that others couldn't in order to succeed. And then one, they get the experience so they can speak, because you know there is value in experience for sure, but the ability to see everything and then speak with experience is like, that's the lethal combination. The reason Adam Oates is so successful and the guys love him, one, because he's passionate, two, he gets the respect, but three, like he was one of the best playmakers in the game. And there's a reason for that. And he's found a way to be able to watch games and watch film and explain it to NHL guys where they get so much value out of that, that that's why they pay him 20, 30 grand a year for him just to watch their games and coach them. It's not, you know, you could pay Wayne Gretzky to watch your games, but Wayne Gretzky's not going to really understand all of the intricacies because Wayne Gretzky just looked up and he's able to make the pass. There's no thinking. There's no nothing. He just does it. And so there's a lot, like, that's why you said just because a guy coached in the NHL, like I get like for sure you coach in the NHL, use that as the way you market. Like I get it. Everyone needs to put food on the table, but that doesn't qualify you to know and to be a very good coach. The results you get from your goalies overall is what qualifies you to be a good coach, if that makes sense.
Ken Hitchcock was the stick boy for a junior B hockey team, and the head coach did not show up. So Ken Hitchcock jumped on the bench as the stick boy, I think at like 18 or something, 19 years old, jumped on the bench for a weekend road trip. They went 3-0. They fired the head coach. Ken Hitchcock is in the Hall of Fame now. Never played the game, could barely skate. Coach Team Canada, the Olympics, Stanley Cup champion, NHL Hall of Fame coach. From stick boy and junior B, from a guy who could never play the game, love the game, learn the game, and turn that into an ability to communicate, and the rest is history. When I was 13 years old, I knew I wasn't playing in the NHL. When I was 15 years old, I realized that the goalie coaches I was working with didn't understand the game as well as I did. And I was 15 years old. So I knew playing was never a ticket for me, but you learn, you got to constantly study. And even to this day, like you played and you're still learning all the time. And that's what this podcast is about, was us started out as us arguing about a drill and a situational versus skill development kind of bias. But that's the only way we get better too, is arguments like these and trying to learn and study the game. And
just being able to open and talk and like converse. And like, there's a few goalie coaches where I speak to like legit daily in my DMs. And like when I post things and they tell me their opinion, I go, oh, that's something I've never heard of. I don't necessarily think that I would like to teach like that, but it's important to talk about that and to like learn that way. And because maybe someone says something you like, and you can take it and tweak it. Maybe, you know, maybe you're completely wrong, and having the confidence in yourself to admit like, hey, like, yeah, I was wrong. I'm going to change the way I teach. This is a big skill. Instead, you just get guys that think they just in their brain think that they're God's gift to goaltending and they never make mistakes and their way is the only way. And that's a problem because you can't grow that way. Mm-hmm. And then
that's why I wanted to come on here and talk to you guys, because I Even before we started, you're like, there's a 98% chance that we're both going to disagree with you. And I'm fine with that because now I feel like I know more at 850 than I did at 750. So
And that's what
I
matters.
see it
That's
as
what
a win.
matters. And I've been ranting because I'm just so angry all the time. According to some people on Instagram, that I will never get a job in the NHL because I upset too many people with evidence. Which I don't, or the way, sorry, my approach is too direct and unprofessional. Like, man, I stop doing things wrong then. Like, there are some things that you're okay to have an opinion with, but then some things are like objectively like the wrong way. And I explained this to someone. They're like, it was one of those like med ball toss drills on a Swiss ball for power development. It was like one of those ones where it's stupid. And someone's like, well, this was a trainer. And they're like, well, there's many ways to do things. There's no one right way. But I had said, well, if you're trying to develop power, it's a very poor way to develop it. Some are objectively more efficient and better than others. And
But
they did not like that at all.
in today's world, I completely agree with you. But in today's world, unfortunately, objectivity gets thrown out the window in place for feelings.
Well, that's why I
Right?
have
Like,
that shirt that literally says data over feelings,
yeah.
because data doesn't care about your feelings. The only thing that changes science is new, better science, especially in strength training, where it's like, the science is, what has there been new strength training science? Maybe velocity-based training, which is literally just like, does it feel like the bar is moving faster? Like, nothing, it's already established. Like, most of that physiology has been figured out. But instead, people just want to. That's another episode. If we say that for another episode, but people just want to force feed that sport specific pendulum because it sells and because parent, because people don't know better. And so you're
Yeah.
preying off ignorance, and it
Oh,
sucks.
yeah.
It sucks for parents. It sucks for kids. But I gotta run.
Yeah,
Maybe
yeah.
we should do this maybe monthly or something, and we can just all just yell at each other and vent.
Yeah. Build up a month's worth of gripes.
All right, well, thanks everyone for listening or watching. We don't know if we're going to be back or not, but I definitely enjoy this, and it's good to see you guys again.
Yeah. Thanks, Philly. Thanks, Boosh.